Right, we're here for another episode of Steak and Banter, and it is also another episode with Donna. This is actually your second appearance, I believe.
Yes, second time. I'm glad to be back, guys. Hello.
This time under better circumstances, not with some ominous air of people not knowing if you're going to flame everyone. Do you hate Maui? No, it's all
ugly
just
cool.
Yeah, it's all just stopped. It's all chill vibes on this episode.
It's a long time ago. Yeah.
By the way, at the moment, I want to actually ask as an outset, because we try to do a bit of like back and forth with the guests before we go straight into the topics now. I've sort of learned people enjoy that, right? One thing I want to ask you actually, Donna, is have you actually done some sort of pivot in your career? Is the idea you actually do want to do like more events in the future? Do you like the balance currently where you do some streaming, you do some events, you do other things? What's the vibe at the moment?
I do like the balance, but yeah, I'd like to do more professional broadcasts. I think it's still like, the thing is like, most of this like bigger broadcasts know me, but they know me as like the one doing the Onepixel interviews. So
yes.
I kind of like have to.
I think they've typecast you a bit.
Yeah. So it's more like,
right.
Okay, you're going to do that stuff with Ona.
Anyway, oh,
right.
But, I see. Right.
Yeah. So it's like this, but, I'm obviously looking for opportunities, but I think it's not easy. Like, you guys know as well. It's
sure.
Just, there's like so many people who want to do these jobs, and it's like I think common that broadcasters just like rehire the same people.
Yeah,
always,
of course.
Over and again. So it's like really hard, like to slip somewhere in. But yeah. I don't know. I'm just gonna wait. Maybe I will have some opportunity one day. But yeah, obviously the balance is also great. I can do my streaming at home, and I go to some of the big events to do the own interviews. And yeah, I mean, so far that's like full-time occupation for me altogether.
Do you have a preference? Would you rather be like the sideline interviewer? Would you want to be the desk host? Do you want to be a stage host? Do you have a preference of which role you like the most at the moment?
I think it really like depends on the event. I think stage host probably only if I think, hey, that's my home crowd or something.
Right.
But yeah,
it can be intimidating if people don't know that role. It's not as easy as people think walking out in front of a massive fucking crowd.
I have high respect for people.
Yeah, of course.
Hosting, especially in front of big crowds.
Yeah.
I have huge respect for that. So I think that's not easy. But for example, what I've done now a few times was like the DHL jobs
sure.
I Am Cologne.
Yeah.
And I've done it this time again. And they sent me this time on stage. Last time they didn't do it last year, but this year they said, hey, just go on stage and talk to people. And that was kind of cool, but it was more like, yeah, okay, it's my home crowd. You know, like I go there every year. Literally everyone here knows me anyways. And it felt different. Like I was like not intimidated by the people, like, you know, in the arena.
Sure.
Looking at
well, that
right
was
now,
your home crowd. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, but besides that, I think I really like interviewing because I have done like so many.
Oh, of course.
Like for Ona's channel. And I also know most of the players.
Yeah.
And they know me. Like
you
they have
the
seen my face around. Yeah. So it's like, it just feels like natural, you know? I don't know. Maybe something, there will be some opportunity for sure.
By the way, two quick things, because when funny things come in my mind, I have to say them. That's sort of my career and curse in esports. So one is, if anyone remembers, there was, I think, one of the most inadvertently hilarious segments ever with DHL years ago, but also one where I knew, like, that, even though I like him, I consider Sadakist like a probably an acquaintance, but close to a friend. I always got along with him. I still think he has the worst at one of those segments ever. If anyone remembers, look this up online. He did a segment where he had to, like, it might not even have been ditched. That might have been, like, you know, MSI or something. It was some company that was at a Cologne or a Katowice. And he did, like, a segment where, like, you know, you get two fans and you do that thing where they answer some trivia questions. And at the end, the winner got, like, a motherboard or something. And at the end, it was a tie, right? Which is, by the way, already a badly designed system if you can end in a tie. So when it was a tie, Sadakist out of nowhere just goes, well, you're a woman, so you win, and just gives her the prize. That's the end of the segment. Like, for real, I think he thought he was making some like edgy, you know, like anti-woke state, but it just comes off really weird. It's just like, what am I watching? What is
I've never
this?
Seen that.
It's I'll have to link you to it later. It's really nuts. Oh, it's fucking out there. And then the other thing is, what you're saying, I actually do think it's underrated to be the crowd host, because everyone's seen people like Orgy. They think it's easy. They don't know that, like, Orgy has been like a radio host for like 15 years or something, mate. He's super comfortable in that setting. Like, I can tell you when Veracity did this event with us last year in Finland, like, the joke would be, she would go out and do that properly, like you would at an esports event, like, and here you go, guys, your home team ends, and then the crowd would just do nothing because it was all Finnish people. It was like 3 p.m. and they hadn't started drinking yet. And if you did the same thing like 4 hours later when they'd had five beers, they'd all go crazy, but they were just giving her nothing, bro. It was crazy. Like, I actually felt really bad for her. It was nuts. Yeah. Because it made her look crap, but she was doing a good job. Sure. You know, the crowd just wasn't feeling it for whatever reason. Anyway, being as you are a woman, you get to start the show. No, actually, the guest always starts the show. So what is your good point, Donna? What is the good thing with CS when joining right now?
Okay, so I'm going to start then. My good point is actually about Liquid. I mean, we heard the news, right, that Twist is leaving and going to FaZe, which I think is amazing for FaZe and Twist. But I also feel like Liquid is looking more alive now again. I mean,
it's like some might say they look at their best. No.
Yeah, like people, like, you know, you could say, oh, it happens that when someone leaves the team or whatever, sure. Like, they just like get this boost. But I don't think that's true. And also, I just read the interview from Nerds after their win today. Like they played, it was on Fisher. And they made it to the semifinals. And after their win, he had an interview and he said, and he actually got asked this question, oh, are you guys performing so good now because there's like no pressure or something? And he said, no, it's actually not that. He said, it's just like something, they were like down 0-2 and something just like switched in their mindsets. And he said, they just like kind of like felt like they're adapting their play style and just like something shifted. And he also said, there's something he doesn't want to talk about. So maybe, I don't know, like, there's some other change happening.
Maybe they already know who's joining or something, and they're hyped for it.
Yeah,
the angle?
That right. The players, yeah. Right. You don't know, like maybe something that the players are looking forward. Right. I don't know. But they're looking good right now, and I like it for them. So they were like 0-2, and now they're looking kind of strong. And honestly, like seeing how they played right now, I think they can even make it to the finals. And I think it was needed for Liquid to make any change. They honestly looked like a dead team. And I could not really tell like why, but it felt like some change was needed. Obviously, they're losing their best player with Twist. And that was probably not the change that people had in mind. But I still think it could be positive for them just like to, you know, mix it up, start fresh. And yeah, I'm excited to see what's going to come next for them.
It's really curious because, I mean, I almost feel like this would also qualify for an ugly point that they're playing their best CS and Twist is playing great CS as we know that he's out the door.
Yeah.
I find it pretty remarkable that with the win that they got today and everything that's happened, their VRS standing jump from 31st to now they're 14th.
It is crazy,
They basically just qualified themselves for the major just because they played this tournament out and didn't just...
Yeah.
Really sit back and say we're a dead team, who cares? It's I mean I'm curious to just see who comes in. I think the biggest rumor has been Elige, and I think it's in some ways the most plausible with his history with the organization and the fact that they need a star player like him. I hope it is him because I wanted to see him become the man again, and I just think he's better than Twist at this point after what I've seen so far this year. I would be curious to see if they're able to maintain this sort of form regardless, though. If they are able to bring somebody else back and then we can see Ultimate taking over games like he has in the past few days. I still find him so hit or miss between everything he does. It's so many games. I feel like it's like 1 out of 3 he hyper carries it, and then 2 out of 3 he's kind of a negative factor for them. It seems like it's rare to see the average Ultimate game, like, you know, his rating average, but I almost never see, like, his median has to be somewhere that's pretty drastically different from his actual average. I mean it's an interesting one right now. I'm not sure if I'm super excited about that just because I need to know what's happening next.
Yeah I get it.
I will say this is actually why, to me, it's not, I actually agree with the middle point you made that, like, I do think you had to do something in Liquid because people always forget they got Shuhei, like, actually a few events before the major. It's not like he's a new addition this season. And unfortunately, this 5-man roster just hasn't worked. And even worse, it's done the worst thing of all, in my opinion, which is it gives you hope all the time. Except for this tournament, you would always have, like, the games. How many times have they had, like, 11 rounds and lost that map? Like, it's crazy. They've lost 1 billion overtime. So the worst thing about that is, to me, that's it. Is that the players aren't bad. There's definitely something there in the core. There's like potential, but they could never access it. And so even though on paper Twist actually is one of their best players and even one of the biggest 100%. Names, Archer has, I will say he's been in three different rosters of the Liquid that hasn't really worked right now. That have never become a contender, even when he played well. So I don't actually, it might sound weird, but I think it's the same in sports. Sometimes you have a good player and a good coach and a good team, but it just doesn't work the way you want it to be. And everyone goes their own way, and maybe everyone finds success elsewhere, which means everyone was good, but that, you know, that blend didn't work. So there is something off about this. And also, I'll add this in as well. I think an angle people haven't thought about in Liquid actually is, since Shuhei is the last to join, he has no say in any of these players. These aren't the players he picked. They're not players that fit his system or have roles, etc. So I think actually him getting like a new player after he joins, maybe he gets some input this time. I will say the thing you're mentioning with Nerds does hype me a little bit, because the problem is, that sounds like mad ominous. Like, what do you mean by that? You can't just say stuff like that and then leave it, because that makes it sound, and listen, this isn't what's happening, but this is why I can't handle people teasing me, because that makes me think things that are probably impossible. That makes me think like, well, it's all right, the twist leaving, because we're getting simple in it. Like, don't even torture me like that. It better not really just be that, like, a coach that's his mates joining us.
I wish I hadn't.
Yeah, low-key wish I didn't know that, because I don't know. It's the thing. Actually, from talking to Nerds when I did an interview with him, he is actually like a really chill guy, so he's not really the sort of person I see would like overhype something. So that even makes me think, Maui, maybe the Liege move is real. Maybe he like fucks with the Liege and wants to play with him or thinks he's good or something. Because I would expect the opposite. The reason why it's relevant you say it though, Donna, is I would think actually the players in Liquid should be bombed, because Twist is one of our best players. He's leaving. So far, the only rumor was that Liege one. There's been no other rumors about anyone joining Liquid. And if anything, as we're talking about right now, they're actually playing probably the best version of CS this lineup's played. Like this, how are you? This lineup could win this event. It's totally plausible. I think they could beat 100%. Any of the teams.
I think it's very possible they make it to the finals, and they maybe win as well. Like, you never know. I think they have a good chance. They're looking good. And it's like, it's kind of sad that they are performing like this now.
That would even be the ultimate curse, wouldn't it? That would be the ultimate Liquid way. You actually win the event, Twist is the MVP, then he instantly takes the Liquid jersey off, and that's it. You never get it again.
Yeah, but, for Twist, it would be a cool story, right? Like, winning the event and then moving on. But I also think, like, one more thing that I just realized while you were, like, talking about the players being bumped out, that Twist is leaving. Of course, like, you can see it like that. Like, yeah, I mean, Nerds also said, like, he's, like, our best player. And but you can also see that this side, because they probably also felt that there has some change, like, some change is going to happen, right? Something has to happen. And until the moment where it was not decided if it's that Twist is leaving or whatever, probably in the back of the head, some of the players have said, like, oh, maybe I'm going to get benched.
Yeah. I think it's motivating them to play, right?
Something to consider, because you're like, okay, my ass is safe for now.
Yeah.
I'm going to play the major. Twist is leaving and we're getting someone new. So they're probably not going to make another change. And this can also, like, subconsciously affect you. And you're just like, okay, like, we were trash, like, for some time. And now I can calm down and just, like, you know, play my best. I'm going to play the major. I think that has also some input for sure.
Also, by the way, I will actually say, in a weird way, it's also really positive, I think, the idea that they actually are at minimum semis. I think they'll make the final. The fact that they're in this position with Twist is also good, because him leaving, if you're a Liquid fan, it's also a bummer. It's been the guy that you've sort of been, this is the Liquid guy for the last, like, 2 years.
Yeah.
So if he leaves, though, when we make the final or we win the event, so, okay, that's cool. In a way, it would be cool that he sort of qualified them to the major then left. You know, I fuck with that. There's one other detail I saw randomly, and I don't think she's memeing. I think actually this is real. Heku posted on Twitter that there was a video about Liquid at Fisher that got taken down because it had a copyright strike from Disney from the movie Cinderella from 1950.
Yeah, I saw that.
Even though I'm sure there's no way it can have. So my joke, and I'll repeat it because people don't all follow Twitter, is like, someone really took those rumors of Twist being a princess way too literally, didn't they? Because if you don't know, that is sort of like the other or complicated thing about Liquid, isn't it? Everyone feels like it was Twist's team and he made the decisions. Which by the way, I would expect you'll get a Carrigan type interview afterwards when he joins Faye as well, say, like, I had some input, you know, but I wasn't the main guy and I didn't pick them all, etc. Because those stories always get skewed one way or the other. It's always that one person's the dictator and they run the whole team. By the way, I don't think any team like that ever has actually existed in CS. It's more just like, maybe you're the player who they listen to the most, or you're the one that's irreplaceable or something, you know.
Yeah, so. He was their IGL for
yeah, that is well. That true? So yeah. Okay. Right, Maui, what is your good point?
Mine is that even though the tournaments that are playing right now may not feel like always the most important, I mean, we have the Fisher one running and the Star Series one, I'm glad to see that tournaments are just willing to run themselves over each other now. And these are two tournaments that are happening now that are pretty substantial in terms of prize pool and in terms of just the ceiling of the teams that are both at them. I mean, you've got the Star Series event, which is a 500k event that's happening in terms of the prize pool, and then the Fisher event is also a 500k event. Liquipedia puts the Star Series one as A tier, Fisher is at a S tier, but really it's cool to see that there's, in my eyes, kind of two big lands that are happening right now, or at least sizable lands, because it's been, at least for me, from my perspective, since about 2019, pre-pandemic, when this last happened, we were seeing those kind of, I would say you would see the A tier event kind of sometimes overrun or run on top of the S tier event. I think the most notable of this was, say, like DreamHack Opens while a bigger event was happening. But then you'd also get things like Epicenter runs at the same time as like the Champions Cup or whatever that is in Malta. Remember, that was a tournament back in 2019 that was happening. And now this year we have a few instances of tournaments that are fairly large running at the same time. I mean, the other example that's coming up is CAC is going to be running concurrently with the Thunderpick event. And I find the CS Asia Championships and Thunderpick are both around $400,000 events. And both of them have a couple of S tier, or like, you'd say tier one teams. I'm not going to say S tier, but they both have a couple of really strong teams at them. Like CAC has Liquid and FaZe, for example. Thunderpick has the Mongols and Furia and Na'Vi. So both of these tournaments are just willing to run concurrently. And I think that this is really strong for the space. This is probably, we get into VRS discussions a lot. This is not, I'm not trying to make a VRS discussion over this one, but just the angle that now VRS can actually operate as I thought it would, where when two tournaments run at the same time, it would have to go down more down the ranking, because people may know that when you do VRS ranking or invites, you sometimes have to just invite teams 1 through 16.
Yes.
And then whoever rejects that, then you get maybe team 17, team 18, because two of the teams bowed out of it. But now, since you have two tournaments running concurrently, you'll have more invites from various areas. So, I mean, you can't obviously, just by the fact that all teams can't go to both events, you have to have teams that are further down in the rankings attend, which then leads to more mobility for the teams as well. But all in all, I like that I can change the channel. I think that's something that's I've kind of been missing for a while, that for the last three years or so, I basically, if there's a tournament on, that's the only tournament that's on, unless I want to watch online tier 2 CS. Now I actually can watch two lands if I just don't like the game that's on one of them. So this is good for me as a CS enjoyer. It's good for the teams in terms of mobility. I find that there's a lot of positives for this, especially even in terms of talent. Now they have to hire a variety of talent because you can't get everybody to both events simultaneously.
What do you think, Donna?
I 100% agree. I think it's very healthy and necessary. And it's exactly how you say, Maui. It's, you can now switch channels and even watch maybe two at the same time on two monitors. It's also good opportunities for the teams, also lower ranked teams and talents. The only thing I would like maybe to see in a change, but that doesn't, it's not up to the TOs. It is a little VRS point, but we don't have to get deep into the discussion. But I would like this event to be able to send out invites maybe 1 or 2 months upfront and not 3 months ahead. Because I think like all of these teams are getting these invites 3 months in the past. And I feel like 3 months is such a long time in CS, especially if it's the season has not even 6 months fully. And then it's kind of decided already in June which teams can fight for the major slot. Because teams that didn't have a lineup until then, or didn't get invites, or didn't have enough points to get invites to even a second event that is going parallel, they have no chance at all. And I think that's the only thing that would make it perfect. So I think already having simultaneously two events at the same time is beautiful. And it gives chances to also teams that are not top 16. But it should be a bit more up to date, in my opinion, like the invites.
Fair enough. By the way, I actually do agree on that latter point. I think the part that's missed with the circuit is, as you see with all these teams like the NIPs of the world, the other thing about VRS is, if you know you haven't got enough, then people at the end want to hustle and attend all the events they can go to and take all the last minute invites and go to smaller lands. Whereas I know what you mean. Basically, you can't know 3 months in advance as a team, do I need to attend all the events or not? If you already knew you were safe in VRS, maybe you'd skip the event. If you didn't know that, maybe you need to attend them all. Also, also your own results are going to affect that. Maybe the next results are the next 2 months. I mean, I need to hustle and get to every weird land there is, etc. Whereas maybe I would have taken a PGL invite in that scenario, or a Fisher LAN or something smaller. I know what you mean. But then I also agree on the viewer point. I actually think that's a mad underrated detail about having two events run. Is I always tell people this. One of the weirdest things we do in esports is we always compare ourselves to real sports, but then we don't in any way do the show the way real sports are done. Like in real sports, no one's actually a fan of a league. You're a fan of a team or a couple of teams, or you want to watch, you know, the big televised match when the big rivals play or something. You don't really sit down and go, ha, I love football. Let me sit down and watch five matches in a row. You wouldn't do that. You watch your team, or you watch like your two title favorites. So I always feel like the reason why this is great is, like Maui said perfectly, and now it's like being able to switch the channel. It's like, right, I'm watching this match now. Oh, I'm not that interested in the next team. Maybe I'm not like a Ty Lue fan. Right? Okay, I'm going to switch over and watch an IP player. I love that. I think as a viewer, we win. We're the ones that win the most. And I also do think that actually it's also really awesome for teams as well. I forget, was it maybe Messi also made this point? The reason why, it's funny, he actually is really good at always having contrarian takes because he just has a different perspective. He actually isn't as big a fan of that thing where they move PGL back one day to allow teams to attend both events. He basically does want it to be what the original VRS stream was, which is, like you're saying, for both teams and for talents. We all thought there would be events that it would be impossible to attend them all. So we all thought, right, that just means like twice as many events or like three times as many events. So that means if you're talent or your teams, everyone gets sort of like tier 1.5 exposure or something. And I think that's way better because right now, the biggest, worst detail of VRS for me is that you go from tier one LAN, which is basically like Maui says, the same 16 teams every single time. If it's a big LAN, you go from that, and then the next option is like online tournament. And if anyone's been watching, I've been watching all these BC games, though they just all blur into one. They don't feel like tournaments. They're matches, but they're not, they don't have the same hype. I do miss what the this, like this Fisher and this Star Series LAN remind me of when you had the DreamHack Opens, and you could still go and you could go and watch the teams play at those. And the other thing that Messi also was saying that I agree with is it gives more teams exposure on LAN as well, and to have actual LAN matches to earn the VRS points and real proper setup. So I think that's awesome. I think that's way better than watching an online match. And I do think it's better that if you think about some of the teams that have come through this, the Ty Lues of the world, you wouldn't have these teams getting into all the fucking tier one events, unfortunately, because every time they go, they'd have to have a really significant result to get any points to be in the next one. So I think it's a positive all around. Yeah, I think it's really good. I'm enjoying watching these lands. Like, again, I'm not watching every match, but I like being able to dip in and dip out.
You can pick.
Yeah. And I also agree with the talent thing as well. It is also way better to have a variety of talents too, even if I don't always like all of them, but whatever. That it's push and pull. There's some people I like, they're like seeing Ted and people like that. It's all Neo Kai. Oh, it's all good. It's all good. Right, okay. We will go to my good. And you know what? I'm gonna switch it up this time, Maui. I'm actually gonna pick a good that I have put many, many times on this show, but in the other two categories. Because you know what? I've just accepted it. I don't know if that's bad itself, but I'm gonna say good, even though they just lost today, is Aurora. And here's why. This is going to blow your mind. Here's why it's good. Because I've just accepted that this is who they are, bro. And you know what? I was thinking about sports, right? And if I watch sports, Maui, there are plenty of really entertaining, good, sometimes very good players in basketball who will never win a ring. Their team will never be the champions. But I tell you what, maybe they're a really fun team to watch. Maybe they match up awesome. I'm thinking like that Clippers team the last few years or something. They were never going to actually win a ring, but they're fucking fun to watch, mate. And I think of like MMA. MMA is probably the ultimate sport. Everyone thinks it's about being the champion. There's only a few people who will ever really be the champion. Sometimes in MMA, it's just about watching really great fighters who are exciting. They have an awesome style of fighting. You want to see them match up against another person, even if it's not a title fight. You just want to see how would these two people do. They're entertainers. I would say that this is why I've accepted it, Maui. Even though, yeah, in past episodes, I'm always bombed out about the Magic thing. He never seems to do a very good job. They always fucking lose like this match here. Every time you think, look at the teams they beat here. You think, right, they're going to win the fucking event. They always blow it somehow early and never actually go look at they're going to win. There's the whole thing of like, oh, are they wasting Zantara's? All those topics can go on the shelf for now, mate. We've talked them all to death. I actually, even if this team only ever does what they do now, which is most times play 8 out of 10 CS and then every now and then drop a 6 out of 10, not great with one and lose the game, I'll accept that. If I actually look at the top 10, this is actually one of the teams I do enjoy watching play. If there's ever a good teams in the tournament, I want them to play this team. I want to see, like we did in this event, right? By the way, this event was perfect for it. You took Astralis, Ty Lue, Fury and Liquid and had them play Aurora. That's a fucking awesome test for those teams. And guess what? Some of them didn't pass it. One of them did. I actually just genuinely enjoy watching them, despite all the drama and all. I actually just... So there's no bad here. I know they have downsides and they have flaws, but I've accepted they probably can't get out of them. There's no other IGLs to get. They've done what they've done, and they've already, by the way, they've also got a really good roster. I actually think the thing that is always underrated is, mate, this team has just real firepower every time they enter the server. Like, I like watching them play. I think they're a good team. Thoughts, Donna? Thoughts on Aurora?
Yeah, I like watching them too, especially when Xantaris is on fire. That's like, it's really nice to watch. Like, I've co-streamed a lot of their matches, and like, it's just like there's something. I mean, I've watched Xantaris a lot also back then when he played in Big. I've been kind of like following his career for
just a really entertaining player, right? He literally just runs out, shoots people in the head. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's he's just like very, very talented, and I also like when Voxic has his moments.
Yeah, yeah.
I do think they like I just don't understand what's like missing for them, because I feel like I kind of like lose hope, and then I'm like exactly like you, like, okay, maybe that's it. They just like, they're like playoffs team, but they're not going further. And then they have like moments and like, okay, now it's happening. For example, on EWC, when they beat Falcon Swole, I was like, sure. Okay, I feel like, you know,
yeah,
especially
you could win the event, right? Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, okay, they literally beat like probably one of the favorites, and they beat like a team made of superstars and everything. And they looked so sharp and on point. And then when they played against Mongols, first map was like close. I was like, okay, okay. And then the longer I watched, the more like I felt like the energy got sucked out of the room. And it just like, I could feel like that it the same happened to them. And I was just like, I don't know. I feel like there's just like some kind of endurance not there to just like make it like over this point to just grab this trophy. And it's very frustrating. I think their fans are also very frustrated about it. And
sure. They'll let you know if they're frustrated. Don't worry, they'll definitely hit send.
Yeah,
tweet,
yeah. You
know?
I mean, yeah, they have like they have a big fan base. Yeah, and I have some Aurora fans also, like when I co-stream and then they're in my chat and they just like really say like that's their biggest wish, just to see them once lifting a trophy. And of course, then you have also people who are just like toxic and then flame others who criticize or whatever. Sure. But I don't want to talk about that. But it's just like you can see that it's just like it's like so desired for them and for their fans. And it's just like they I don't know, the endurance is not there. And I don't know like what's going to happen. But maybe it's how you say, maybe that's their destiny. And they're just not going to be able to lift a trophy, which would be sad, because I think they have all the utils to work with, you know.
By the way, I also do agree. I want to see Xantaris win one LAN MVP in his fucking career, for fuck's sake. He's the most egregious player. Never have one would be too much, wouldn't it? Come on, he's got to get one. And come on, we've got to get him one.
Yeah.
It'd be nice. I would say just that. The saddest part about you making this a good point is that it proves one thing, that threats work. The Turkish fans finally broke Thorin. They finally got through after all of those hateful messages. Now that Grok auto translates languages,
okay.
Now he can actually see what they're saying, because I know before you didn't.
Now I love Aurora. Yeah, I don't like.
And now you just you're forced to. I don't really see them elevating themselves, because I've given them so many chances to update their strats, and I just feel like they just play the game of they play CS in a way that it really doesn't feel like they're ever outbraining their opponents as a unit. In the macro, they're never, like, how many times per game are you seeing Aurora on their T sides outbraining their opponent? If they burst into a bomb site and it's successful with a good hit, great. But I just think Madra has a very simple game that he wants to call. It doesn't have a lot of moving pieces. I think it's time that he lets people off the leash a little bit more.
Sure.
I wish that, for example, Wycadia is actually quite good at sneaking around in just his little micro areas, but I don't know if he's given all the space always to really get the better of opponents. Like, I want him to get boosted into window on Mirage every round. You know, I want to see what he does with those kind of spaces, or just with some deeper map control set up for him. Then the team goes back, and maybe he's a lurker that actually isn't making the play towards the bomb site, because I feel like also everything they're setting up is for the most obvious definitive split.
It's a bit telegraphed
into whatever they're doing. Yeah, it's entirely telegraphed every single time. And that's why I think they don't ever really beat the elite teams, because then they just say, oh, they got guys in connector. I wonder if they're going to split A. You know, like, that's just, it's too regular for them. I want to see them try a bit more misdirection and not just fakes. Like sometimes I've actually seen them try before throwing a fake onto a bomb site. One guy runs out while the other three go to the other side. Like that's not what I'm talking about. Like that's not a strat where I'm like really blown away.
That's like some basic shit, bro. I love it.
Yeah. Like push them back, push the other team back, and make them guess for real. You know, so that's it. That's about it. Their players are great. I like all of their players. I think even Madra's been kind of weak lately as an individual, but I there were points where he actually was win condition earlier in the year for them when they were.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Maui. I have my own personal and official reasons not like Madra, but the other four players are all good. I enjoy watching all of the other four. I think they're all. And like I said, I don't know who else they would get as IGL, so I don't even complain about that anymore. Unless you're going to go international, you probably have to keep this roster. So that's why I say I've sort of accepted it, because I get the MMA example is why I tried to do that analogy, because in MMA, it's really famous that you get someone who's like an up and coming fighter and they get all these crazy knockouts. And then when they finally get to the title fight, oftentimes it's like Aurora, like they just play scared or they fade or the other person plays really tactical, you know, and doesn't let them get into their style. And listen, when that happens and you realize, oh, this guy's never going to be a champion, you don't give up. Then what you do is like this, you go, right, let me just put him in interesting fights though. Like, let me have against someone where that'd be a great matchup. But I actually think there are teams, funny enough, teams like Liquid Fury. I love that anytime they play. These matches, mate, are awesome when they play. Like, you don't know who's going to win these games. That's the other thing about Aurora that I sort of learned to embrace, Maui. Yeah, it sucks when they let you down, but they also, the second, it's like Donna said, the second you actually are out on them and you think, ah, they're never going to win, they'll have like a crazy series, bro, where they'll like knock out like a top 16 or something and look awesome. So it's exciting in that sense too. I just like it. Okay. So Donna, we've come to your section. Oh no, that's late actually. It's the bad section now. What is bad in CS at the moment?
Oh, many things. Actually, I should have like threw a little bit like of update here, like some players complaining about the status of the game. But we can maybe throw that like in later.
I have one for that later, don't worry.
Yeah, if you have room for that. I actually wanted to talk about OG because they have just maybe risked their chances to make the major. And I think now, I'm not sure if it's exactly 100 points, but I think they lost around 100 points now at the events that they participated. And Nico was also in an interview literally said like, yeah, they just went to participate to win VRS points because they had a maybe 20% chance to make it, even though they were not still in top 16. But if they would have won maybe two LAN matches, it would have boosted them a lot of in the VRS system with based on points. And so there was a chance, and now they're leaving with like minus points. And I just checked the ranking. Yeah. They dropped around 8 spots. It could be 7 or 8. I'm not 100% sure. But they dropped like 8 spots. So they were like on the border. It was like maybe around like, I don't know, 19 or something. And like till 16, you make the majors for EU now. And now they're like at 20 something. So they dropped like 7, 8 spots from a tournament that they participated to literally farm VRS to make the major.
Right.
And that's a sad part about it, right? And last major, they made it to the online for this like close qualifier online, MRQ, right? And they qualified, and now they made a few changes. And I don't know, like I felt like I honestly like the last OG more. And now I feel like, they're probably not going to make it. I don't know. I mean, there's still maybe a slight chance. They have still some matches upcoming. But, yeah, it's a sad reality, you know, like when you were like so close and then you fuck it up in one tournament and that's it for you, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty harsh that they dropped so significantly so quickly. I didn't really catch that they fell that far. I didn't really think about them as a major qualifying team, though. If I'm being real,
I mean, if you think about the first stage or something, you could see them in that first stage or something, you know.
I mean, they had a decent chance.
Yeah, so
maybe get the last spot, you know.
Yeah. I mean, there were a few teams I probably would have taken over them, but I mean, I think OG has a couple nice pieces. That's how I would frame this. I think that Krizen actually, when I watch OG games a little bit closer, at times I would see the calls look pretty nice, but from him. So that was an aspect that I enjoyed. And then Nikodaz is kind of one of those just wild card players where he one game absolutely takes it over, but then the other game is just the most average rifle opper. I mean, he's kind of leaned a little bit more into he leans more into rifling than most oppers do. And I'm not really sure that the Erosdos move I don't really, I just don't rate that guy at all anymore. I think that anything he had back on,
Saw?
Yeah. I found like that has completely vanished. I don't really see too much potential from him anymore either. The other guys are okay. I mean, Adam B and Spook, I've seen like bits from, but I'm not really, I just think that they're in a position again that I feel like they just keep finding themselves in. It's like the story of OG is just, it's just perpetual. It's just like you get a couple up and comers. One of them proves to be pretty solid. And then he just gets sniped over and over and over again. And I guess that's just what they are. I mean, I don't really know what to make of them beyond really being a farm team. I know that it seems like teams don't ever really want to admit that, but it's okay. It's a fine business model, like producing talent, scouting them. I feel like Krizen actually is probably going to be the guy. If I have to guess, if I look at any people on their team, I'd say Krizen's the most likely to make the move up to another better team. But as for their other players, I'm not the most invested in them.
No, I know what you mean. Like, the main problem with this is I'm generally not an OG fan for two reasons. One, they're just one of those orgs with the social media manager just always comes at me with some whack angle. It's like, who the fuck are you? You've never won anything. And you're not even funny. You're just some fucking shit manager. But all right, all good. So there's that. And then there's the other angle, which is, like what Maui was saying there, almost all the other rosters for the past, like, we're talking for real, like 3 years at this point, they always feel like they just collect, like, the cast-offs of other teams. Like, if someone's like has a name, but it's not quite a big name, or they were like you're the best player on a Czech team, then you join this team, and then you just, it's purgatory. You don't like lose all your status because they're always a vaguely relevant team, at least online. And they're, like we're saying, like, now they're on the outskirts of making it to the LANs, but you also never seem to get any results. And I actually looked it up. This is only the second LAN this year they've gotten to go to, this Star Series one. Like, the other one was just the major. And if people watch online, I can tell you they're in trouble online too, because they were one of the teams that was in the mix to make it deep in all the CCTs. So, well, the problem they have now is you do have the teams like the BC Games now where you play them and then Simple just drops plus 30 on you and you lose. Like, that means even online it's going to get hard. And I agree on the LAN point. This is the part people never actually have understood still about VRS, is VRS contains an element that we never had in other tournaments. In other tournaments, as far as I know, like HLTV's ranking used to just work on your placing based on the tournament, right? This takes into account who you beat and who you lose. It's why, famously, if we tied to that Liquid point before, it's why Liquid was in trouble for the major when they played that online fucking qualifier and they lost it immediately to a nobody team. That basically just cost them VRS points, and people don't know. Like, that just fucks you over. Like, it's almost like an Elo system where if you beat the big team, you gain, but if you lose to a small team, you fuck yourself completely. So in a way, because we never had this before, you would always say yes to a LAN because you're gambling on making it or you don't lose anything. Now you actually hurt if you go to the LAN and you fuck up like this. People don't know they came last place, and yeah, true, they played NIP, was probably pretty good, but if you can't beat NIP or Bait, like, these are the teams at that tournament, man. Like, that's just the field. Like, you're in trouble. So yeah, I agree. I know what you mean. Like, if you think about the first Swiss stage, because you always have to remember the major is so big now, the first Swiss stage, mate, isn't even as good a field as these tournaments. Like, they could have made it there, they could have snuck in. I don't think they would do much. Like, you know, they'd probably go like 1-3 or something.
No, but they could have snuck in, you know?
Yeah. Which is big. That's huge for the org, right? Yeah. Because you get stickers,
a lot of money on the line.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, the last reason I'll even say why I actually do think this is sad is because, unlike those past years I was talking about, I actually thought this was the one core of OG where it looked like they did try to make a real team, because that Krizen guy, everyone says in the scene, because he's like 19 years old and he's the IGL, if you don't know, and he's Danish. Think about that. You're checking all the boxes here. He's supposed to be one of like the next ones who's going to be a tier one IGL. People say like that was a steal that they got in, and like they got in there early, etc. So if you have that player, and then you do have people like Nikitos, by the way, is still a good player. He could play tier one. That guy could be like, again, an NIP fanatic or a better team than that, by the way. And then you also look, I have the Adam B guy, the one they just got recently. It's actually kind of sad. I don't even hate this OG lad. It just hasn't worked out, unfortunately. And I know what you mean. Like, they are in a really bad... It's basically... Here's the reason it sucks. If they're only going to have two lands in the year, they're basically done for the year. It's just online cops until the end of the year. And I think that has to be demotivating if you're a player. All you have to look forward to is another online match. Like, that's not what people play for. They play to get on the stage. They play to even dream of the trophy or to be at the same event with Sneeko and fucking Zwoo. They don't want to just be playing an online game. Oh, well, time to play nine again. Like, that's like some Groundhog's Day shit. You wake up every day, you play nine Paravision, and then Simple beats the shit out of you plus 30. You say, oh, well, off I go to sleep, wake up again. Fucking hell. That's what it's like. Go on then, Maui.
They did lose to Simple so many times.
Oh, it's mental.
They lost a BC game. They beat him once.
Bro, it's actually, at this point, it's almost, at this point, he shouldn't be playing day two at CS, just so the people can have a fucking chance. Like, we're letting the GOAT literally just smurf on, like, this is like Michael Jordan when he's not even totally washed out. He's just going to, like, the playground and just beating up all the, it's like, let the kids win a fucking game. Like, you're not supposed to just dominate the ball, Mike. Like, this is too funny. Get Simple on a real team, for fuck's sake. Get him out of day two. Let people play CS again. Because, by the way, I'll even make a serious point. How are you supposed to actually coach players? Think about this. Tier 2 online, he's supposed to be like working out tactics. What are you going to tell them when Simple just drops a plus 30 and no scopes them all? Like, I don't know, just don't play Simple. Like, what lesson am I taking from that? Like, there's nothing there, is there? Like, you don't have a chance or whatever. I think it's a bummer. Look, part of me likes that OG's failing, but not this specific roster. It's more the whack ones back in the day.
Yeah,
and as Maui said, here's the other thing. They've had some players, mate. Forget, we're not going to go back as far as OG. They had Dexter not that long ago. They had Heavy Guard. People forget that one, mate. They've had some really good players. If you could actually do, you know, like I always do with an IP, if you could take the last, like, 4 years of OG and we could just make a super team, bro, it would actually be, like, a really good squad of players. Like, who would legit cook? It's just unfortunately they never got them all at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Mine is about a player that's up and coming, if he ever comes to a land, that is. I'm really curious about this situation that's kind of been the talk of forums, Twitter, YouTube, all of that. The No Cries guy that is currently ranked number 2 on North American.
I heard about this on the Chad's podcast, right? But I don't know anything about it. So as far as I know, the facts are something like a kid appears out of nowhere, who's wrecking the NA server, and then he's got a Mongolian flag, which already people are like, what the fuck? Because obviously all Mongols and all that. But then there's some weird dispute of, like, is he secretly a Russian who came over from before? So is that the premise? Can you give us all the story on this? What's the situation?
Yeah, yeah. The stuff that we know about No Cries right now is more or less what you mentioned. He was ranked number 1 briefly on North American Face It. Now he's ranked number 2 on Face It. He does have a Mongolian flag. He does speak Russian. I think that people said that in some of his earlier pugs, he played with all Russian flags around him. So it's strongly assumed that he's a Russian person. Well, he's got a Mongolian flag. So he's an Eastern European. Yeah, Russian-speaking player that has moved over here, and
is he like wrecking everyone on the games? Is that the premise?
Yeah. He's putting up his rating. His numbers are like Donk's numbers in Euro.
Oh wow, right.
So,
okay.
But the thing is that he doesn't play as good of competition regularly, and in fact, he lost. I looked at a lot of his pugs recently. One of the last games he lost was against Stewie, for example. So he's not like. He's not a god. He's not always going to just put up insane numbers, you know. And again, this does suit the point that fate of the universe on the line, even against a guy that might be using low FOV aimbot cheater, radar hacker. I still get Stewie on the team, and he's still going to win versus him. No, but I'm not making an accusation necessarily with that. The way I've talked about it before, I looked at a couple of the No Cries games, and I would say, if it's like gun to my head, is this guy cheating or not? You have to be right about this answer or you will die. I would say he's cheating. I would say I would say he's using it.
He just looks too good. He'd have to actually be like a Donk level, you think?
It's like low FOV. It's like low FOV aimbot, if I had to guess. I mean, he's not wall hacking. He's not radar hacking. His movement's actually good. He actually knows a lot of nade lineups. It's kind of like if you put...
By the way, that's even crazier, because normally people would use the radar hack or the wall hack. That's the more plausible one you can get with. The idea you'd use an aimbot's crazy, bro. Or like trigger bot or whatever.
I don't really know. Yeah, I don't really know exactly what low FOV looks like today. But having watched a lot of those videos back in the day of what all of the different hacks look like, low FOV just seems the most plausible because his just micro corrections for aim are so absurdly consistent. It's not that he has a couple crazy clips. It's that you watch one demo and he does it so many times. Like, he'll hit such absurd shots. But then sometimes when he's aiming at people, his aim will look kind of weirdly bad too. It's I feel like with someone like watching Kyosuke, who has incredible aim, it almost feels like I can explain why the aim is bad in certain cases versus why it's good. Like, oh, that caught him off a little bit. But then sometimes he's taking a very simple fight, no cries, and then he just aims at the wall a little bit too much, and then just... The guy's on his screen, and yet he shoots the wall, and it's like, that's just, that doesn't even look like you would normally correct like that. So that's why I think it's talk. If I had to guess, it's that. I'm not, again, though, this isn't, it's kind of weird because I'm not trying to make the statement like this guy is hacking because I don't have true, like pure evidence of it. But I also think that, you know, he was supposed to go to that LAN recently. So that was another detail of the story that unveiled is that there's this smaller, like, Fragadelphia, New Jersey land or something like that. These are usually smaller prize pools, less teams go to them, lower stakes, top teams don't go to them. I don't think people are flying overseas for these for VRS points or anything like that. And he was supposed to go with the team. It looked like it was all taken care of. And then he had to ditch it for some emergency, which is like, yeah, if it happens once, I'll give it a pass. But we'll see how it unfolds as time goes on. But then also, he kind of does these things that just make it seem like, oh, you're a cheater and you now like the attention. So he's said on Cooper's stream something that was pretty ominous. I can't remember the exact quote. And if you misquote someone nowadays, you just get completely hung to dry. So I'm not gonna say it. But it was very ominous what he said. And then he uses the default Faceit profile picture and he also uses no skins at all. And it's just kind of like, I mean, what other way would I really, if I wanted to hack and play a lot of Faceit, I would probably do all of these things to not draw too much attention.
Oh, right.
So I watching the demo is just really where.
By the way, being as you're putting it as bad, is he being hyped as like he is like some NA prodigy and everyone thinks, oh,
It would probably be ugly if there wasn't this sort of hype around him. The reason it's bad is I feel like people think this guy's going to save North America. And you know what? If No Cries turns out to be legit and he ends up being a god for NA, and I'm wrong, then I'll happily be wrong. You know, it's like the people that thought Zywoo was cheating probably too early on.
I thought of it too.
I mean, the people that thought Rops was hacking, the people that thought Zywoo was hacking, I'll be one of them that says, I think No Cry's hacking. I think this guy's cheating. I think he's finding a way. I'm not going to, again, I guess that is an accusation.
Yeah, but by saying I think it's better than saying I know. There's a distinction I think people do need to make.
I don't think he should be banned. I don't think he should be banned. I don't think he should ever. Yeah, that's the difference. Yeah. I think he should be given a chance to prove himself. Because as it stands, I think if you put this guy on LAN, he'll look like a good tier 2.5 player. Because he does all of these things right in the game. Okay. It's just that his aim is way too fucking good a lot of the time.
Okay. Do you have any thoughts on that, Donna? I don't blame you if you don't, by the way, it's anything, but do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, so first of all, I was not 100% sure if I was thinking of the same guy when Maui talked about him. But I actually saw the post too. So I saw it was like had a lot of like upvotes on Twitter, and someone tweeted level zero Steam account or something. He went from 2,150 ELO to rank one in Faceit, which is insane, by the way, in 600 games, and posted his profile. It is the same guy. I just like checked the picture, and I've actually seen that post as well. People were like discussing if he's cheating or not. So some were like, yeah, he might have like a slight aimbot or something, but nothing obvious. There have been streamers, like one of my friends, Furious, he analyzed his demos, I think, on stream and made a YouTube video of it, where he would like see if he's cheating or not. And people are also like discussing and some saying like, ah, no, he's clean or not. Maybe a little aimbot or whatever. So it's really hard to say because if it's just like he could just be insanely good, just like how Robs and Zywoo were and got accused of cheating, or that he might have some slight help, but you cannot, I think, deny that he's already playing on a really high level. And I think if someone plays on a really high level, if they would have some help, it's like so hard to tell. And I don't think really we can know. There's just like one comment that I found like randomly, and I just wanted to read it under the post with his face and profile, if he's cheating or not. And someone wrote, checked his DUS2 demo or something, and some other demos. I think he's not cheating. He's just playing NA bots. So.
NA.
Okay. That's the simplest of a comment now. Fair enough.
It's like, no, it just looks like it because he's playing against NA players. Oh man, like the I love the banter, but yeah, I don't know, we can't know. But there's for sure a cheating problem. Like I think there have been like some people cheating on like and being like top on Faceit and farming money. And yeah, I think Faceit has really to look into it. I don't know how you find it out, but we for sure should have a look on this kid at this kid.
Okay, this is obviously something I haven't looked into. I don't watch fucking people who play NA Faceit, do I? Like, I don't watch people who play EU Faceit for that matter. I wait till they become pros and then I jump in at that point in time. Not least because, by the way, unless you're like really, really nerdy about stuff, you can't really ever know if people are actually going to be good until they go through the hardships of like being on a team, having the attention, going to the LAN. There's plenty of people, sadly, who were actually awesome online who never made it. No, the real reason this is why I asked Maui that clarifying question. I could tell the reason why it wasn't ugly, why he put it as bad, is because this is what's so sad. Is listen, in a way, I actually agree with the banter Donna says. Here's how you know no one actually believes in NA talent. Because if he's really, really insane, well, what you should say is, whoa, guys, wait, this could be our ROPS of Zebu or Donk or something. Instead, everyone's like, must just cheat then. It's like, because that's how jaded everyone is. And I don't blame them because, unfortunately, North America, I actually think, is the worst talent for developing, worst region for developing talent relative to how much money and how many, like, historical players they've had. Because in the modern day, kids don't, CS isn't the cool game for like a 15-year-old kid. I'm sorry, it is like Fortnite or Valorant or fucking, they might just play games in FPS, maybe they play League of Legends or some other fucking modern day game, PUBG, Apex Legends. Like, I feel like that's where all the people who would be the top CS players go. So if there's some prodigy in Fortnite or Apex Legends, sorry, that probably would have been the player who would replace Stewie and Twists and all those guys if there's a next generation. So it is sad because essentially no one is actually open to the idea. Because I always tell people, there's a really weird dunk that fans do about Zebu and ROPS. They always tell that story and they go, and you know, ROPS, even famous players like JW thought he cheated. And then Zebu, can you believe it? G2 and Kenny S thought he cheated. And it's like, guys, if you never watched the games, like, go back and watch the videos they're talking about. It does look like they cheat. Do you know why? Because these were some of the greatest players we've ever developed in European Counter-Strike. Like, the point is, they weren't just like, oh, he could play at a LAN. They actually were the people with the moment they came to the LAN, they're like, oh, actually, they're really good. And in case of like Zebu, they're amazing already. Like, that should look like cheating. Like, I always think when I watch Donk now, if I saw that and you took the nameplates off and told me it was a CCT, I'd tell you the guy's 100% cheating. There's no way that isn't a namebot when he's spraying. Like, it has to be. Because even when I see him spray it online at the Major, I'm like, that's impossible. How is he doing this? Like, he probably is the GOAT. So I think that's totally reasonable. It's, in fact, in a weird way, if you are the player and you don't cheat, that's actually a positive that people think you cheat, mate. That's actually, that maybe implies if you actually can ever get through this and get to a LAN, it'll go the other way eventually. You'll be like legendary that you were so fucking good, people thought you must be like a smurf or a cheat in some way. Even by the way, that whole thing of like, he has a Mongolian flag. Wait a minute, the Mongols is already famous. Like, oh, and then he plays in NA, but there's no good players in NA. But he used to play with Russians. Like, what the fuck is this, like, intrigue? It's crazy, bro. Why, this backstory is almost more nuts than the idea the guy carries. So, and sadly, though, Maui, this is where, if this guy doesn't cheat, he is a fucking idiot, though. Because the idea that you smurf online and you're this unknown player, no one knows, no one has any connection to you, you didn't work your way through all the competitive teams, and then a LAN comes up, not even like a massive LAN, and you dodge it, and worst of all, you don't just dodge it, you went to the last minute and you used the classic, like, oh, emergency, because no one can say, like, if you say that, like, people assume you might have, like, health condition or maybe a family member died, so we're all going to give you that break, but I'm sorry, that is probably the most famous sign of an online cheater ever in the history of Counter-Strike, is that they're amazing, they promise they're going to the LAN's coming up, and, oh, what do you know, they just can't attend, or their dad had some, or it was a wedding, or grandma, that's really famous that people say that, I'm afraid that's just actually the most classic thing. And the problem is, once you dodge a couple of LANs, by the way, it doesn't matter if you do cheat, everyone will just assume you do. Everyone will assume the reason you won't go is that you think that you're going to get exposed. And the saddest thing is, by the way, if you actually are legit, don't even worry about that whole, like, yeah, but there'll be scrutiny, I'll be scared. If you go to the LAN and you actually are good, but even if you just play CSDM, people will see you actually have the skills, mate, and they'll acknowledge you, they'll give you the pass, they'll go, no, I saw him play, he was real, I was stood behind him. He's a... So it's also the easiest way to clear this up if you're the Rockrise guy. Go to the very next LAN that you can, that any known invite level player attends and just go and just show that you're decent at the game, and immediately it'll start unwinding some of the sort of negative shit stirring around you, like Maui says. I think it's totally fair to say that. Again, we're not just saying it's like a good player. If it's someone who's actually like tearing everyone up, it basically has to be a prodigy or it's cheating. So you can only be one of the two, it seems, right? I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Right. For my bad point. See, the problem is I didn't actually write it down because I was talking there. Fuck, what was it? I just had it a second ago. What was my bad point? We got two into that topic with there.
Now we can talk about the CS updates.
Oh, no, actually. But have you noticed? We'll do that later because I do have that in my ugly section. I've got that as my ugly point. I'll tell you what there you go. The reason I didn't write the bad point down is technically, if you watch Top Take Point Made, it is a totally different show, so it's fine to discuss the topic twice. I did bring it up on that and we loosely addressed it. The topic, Donna, is this, and I'm putting it just as bad. It's that situation that you will have seen from people like Messi also, of the fact that Liquid at this LAN, it's already known that Twists is going to face. In fact, he even updated his Twitter header while playing this tournament still.
Yeah.
But when they had that match where Liquid was playing against FaZe, right, that already is slightly dodgy because people could worry, like, in a way, if you lose, you make the team you're joining look better. But it was even worse because what Messi also, I think it was, pointed out was that there was even, like, as we talked about Liquid, there was crazy VRS implications for Liquid and vice versa. Like, if you're FaZe, you need points too. So in that scenario, what I don't like and why I've put it as bad is that is an example of a conflict of interest that I think just should not be allowed to happen in Counter-Strike. Because in a way, if you actually think it through, yes, we're not accusing Twists that he would do this. But in theory, if you actually just tank that game and lose to FaZe, who you're about to join, well, at the next major, he's going to be on FaZe. Like, you increase FaZe's chances of going, and in doing so, you could actually have, like, secured yourself stickers. They could essentially say that match could have hundreds of thousands of dollars, like, riding on it. And you've essentially, the way the circuit's designed right now, it almost incentivizes someone to throw the game or to not play as well or to, you know, play well and then accidentally lose. Like, it's not that we're accusing Twists of that. I just don't like that even exists. I don't want that to ever be. I don't want to ever worry that if he had like a minus 15 game, that wasn't a bad game. It's like, he sort of knows he's not incentivized to win. He's going to be in that team next week or whatever. So I don't know what you think of this. Let's open it up. What do you think of this, Donna, this weird conflict of interest?
Yeah, I think you have a point in general, because there was like something similar, I think, where you had like the same owner company. Who was it? Owner of FaZe and...
Complexity, maybe, at the end of last year, right?
And yeah. They were like also at the same event. And I think it's also something where, I 100% understand, like any conflict of interest should be like considered that we avoid it, and you can do that by just giving them different seats so they're not on the same, at least not on the same group or whatever. Obviously, like Twist, someone like Twist would never jeopardize his
career. We certainly hope not. Yeah, of course.
Like, yeah, I mean, obviously, like he would never do that, because you also saw like he just gave his best and
they were absolutely.
But of course, technically, let's just like speak about any team, not just like particularly in our Liquid phase. If you think, hey, like, I don't know, maybe you're on the verge of being in capsule one or two and maybe winning this LAN game, or like your future team winning this LAN game brings you closer to being a better capsule. Of course, like, you know, that like it is a risk that I think no one in especially tier one would ever take. But I 100% agree with you that we should not worry about that stuff at all. And I think it just like comes down to transparency that the TOs know upfront when changes are happening. And even though if they're not, because normally if changes like this are happening, just like people within the team, right? And they don't go to TOs and like, of course, like they have the lineup, but if they make a change, plan a roster change like after event or something, I don't know if they're like obligated to tell them. I actually don't know that.
I don't imagine
but,
so.
I think you should have some sort of transparency and say like, hey, that's the case. That's gonna happen after this event, but we're gonna meet each other. So maybe like, you know, put them in different groups or whatever. I don't know. What do you think, Maui?
My take on this is a little bit distant from Thorin. This particular issue I don't think is great, but I've talked about conflicts of interest in my opinion on them in the past. I mean, I think when By the Numbers existed, I think that Richard and Thorin, you guys really cracked down on practically every single conflict of interest possible. I don't see conflicts of interest as black and white as I felt like you guys handled them some of the times. That's my light pushback on this, because, for example, I remember there was the case where evil genius. And people are going to be mad about this, but I mean, I think that there's a lot of businesses that run with conflicts of interest all the time. Oh, sure. And they function just fine with light. I mean, there's nepotism that is just rampant in this industry. And so that's not really anything new to me whatsoever. It's kind of just playing the game, which is not great. Like, I'm not saying these are good things, but it's just kind of what the reality sure. we live in is that there's always going to be connections to everybody through everything. I'll even give just light examples here before I get on this particular issue, is that I don't think Elige owning 0.043% of Team Liquid when he plays them right. at all points in time is influencing how he does in that game.
Sure.
I also even took a harder stance that was like, when Evil Geniuses sent two teams to Fragadelphia, I was kind of like, this doesn't really bother me that much because it's just a small tournament that has, and this was before VRS, and it was like, so there's no real implication or bearing on, in my eyes, on both of those teams being there. Like, yes, there is possibility of foul play for these kinds of issues, but for Twiss, who is directly part of FaZe already and already has in his Twitter banner that he's playing for FaZe and then plays them in a match that influences them getting to the major, the implications are so massive immediately. And I do not think that should have been possible at any point. I don't care that it, you know, they lost or that FaZe lost and that Twist actually played really well. And you mm-hmm. would definitely say there's not clearly there was no foul play in that match. But that should never have been possible. That never ever should have been. That should have been a 2-2 decider game at the event.
It was a big
game. It was crazy.
I think you just have to change the bracket. I think you just have to change the bracket for that. I don't think you should be allowed to run that match because of everything we know. Like as soon as that news hits, or even behind the scenes, it needs to be revealed that that's possible. That needs to change immediately. You can't run that game. Just switch the teams. And yeah, maybe that's not in terms of competitive integrity, working with the Bukol system in the perfect way. I would rather upset the Bukol system than upset the fact that this is such a drastically in-your-face issue. So yeah, like, this is where my scale finally hits a breaking point where I say the alarm bell needs to be rung and it needs to be adhered to.
By the way, one minor thing as well. I don't know about you guys. This isn't a big deal to me, but I also actually am really not a fan of the thing where he put the FaZe banner on while he's still playing games for Liquid. Like, yes, to me, that's just a little bit of professionalism. I know what you mean, but to me, as long as you're representing the Liquid org and you try to win games for them and you get paid by it, you wear their jersey and you put their branded on and you wait till the day that you aren't ever going to play again, then you change your branding. You know what? It's only a minor thing, but I just don't like that either, personally, you know. I mean, put it this way, it's a bad look if I was literally watching the game live, FaZe versus Liquid, then I clicked on your Twitter and I see that, wait a minute, he's a Liquid bullet. That just looks bad, like we're even talking about.
Okay, but let's go to the ugly point now. So my ugly point is Navi. And right now, people obviously don't know when we're recording. It's bad timing, maybe, because they just won 2-0 against Passion, very dominant. Yeah. But outside of that, I think they have been looking so shaky. And I just I just don't know what the fuck is going on with Navi. Like, I don't know. I had I think they look good at Cologne, right? They made it to the playoffs. And they looked so good at the Cologne playoffs. And then they, which was it? I think it was Mirage against Spirit. I think they could have literally won it. Like, if you watch the match, Mirage, I think if they literally fumbled this map and this cost them their game. Otherwise, they would have made it maybe even further into the tournament. And since then, I don't know, I've just watched their matches and it's so underwhelming. And I cannot of course, people like to pick on something. So I see people I don't know, saying, oh yeah, Eam is not playing good or whatever. But then you look at their matches and sometimes you have Eam carrying them. And then the next match, he's I don't know, has a 0-8 rating. And then you have Imakazi putting up a 1-7 rating, and the next game he's in the red zone. You know, it's just I don't know. It's everything looks so inconsistent in this team. It's just I can't understand what's going on and why they've been so inconsistent and shaky. Not just as a team, but I also feel the players individually. I think something really has to happen. I don't know. If they're planning any changes or if they're just gonna change up the style. I mean, we all know that Blade likes to keep his system and his style, and it has been working out well for Navi. Right now, it's not working out, and I don't know if it's if the players cannot adapt, or if the chemistry is not working between the players, it's like so hard to tell from the outside. And I think it's very underwhelming how they have been performing recently, and I expected more of them. And I like Na'Vi, so I want to see them do better.
I need to look back. I mean, Blade did release a video, or Na'Vi released a video with Blade going over why they lost one of their games recently versus FaZe Clan. I definitely need to take a closer look at this iteration of them. My giant macro image of Na'Vi right now is that in a scene where everybody has upgraded firepower or just simply has better players, I don't think Na'Vi really goes toe-to-toe. I mean, I look at Bit and Wonderful, and I see two guys that are really, really good and probably should be seen as cornerstone or building pieces for the future of Na'Vi, but I find the rest of the crew a bit more expendable. And I say that for cultural reasons, because they're both Ukrainian, but also they've just been quite solid overall. I mean, Bit, to me, is their best player. Wonderful is, on any given day, could be their best player. It's kind of, for me, them one and two, even like 1A, 1B. And then I think Mikaze has actually shown me enough where I find that I feel he's pretty safe. I still am not. He was definitely overhated by Donk and Zwei, who just said negative things about him because they probably shit-talked him in a pub or vice versa. But I think we're getting to a point where Ima is probably either needing to, if they want to do another change, it either needs to probably be Ima becomes the in-game leader and then they get a really good anchor, or and so Alexi would be out, or they would need to replace Ima. But I need to watch them a little bit closer before I say whether this is like a strategic problem or an individual problem, because some of the recent games I didn't really see their stuff at Star Series yet.
Sure. Right. I will say, first of all, there was an interview with Blade only a few days ago by Mira on HLTV, and it had a paragraph in it I thought was really telling, where it said, "We are in the process of building something. We don't focus now on trophies at all. We don't need trophies. You can clearly see that we cannot win them. Why should we even be bothered by this? Stressed or constantly frustrated?" And basically, right, I would say this. I think Blade is something of a straight shooter. He's not really a person I think uses the media to, you know, play mind games or to like lie or trick people. He's actually a kind of guy who just plainly states what he said. Look, he doesn't give away the secrets of what they're doing in the team, but he actually just tells you genuinely, I think, what he thinks and what his assessment is. So to me, that is him just basically saying, if you're an RV fan, lower your expectations. This season, we're not going to win trophies. Like, he even said the major is their test. By the way, if you're a big RV fan, as in from last year, and you want them to be one of the top teams and be in all the finals, and then that's a bad sign, because what he's basically saying is this season's just about improving and maybe we could do something at the major, which is like, bro, we're only a few events into this season. Like, what? Like, that's a kind of a bummer if you wanted it. Remember, they entered the year as like, this could still be a top three team. This could be a team that wins a trophy here and there, or maybe they can be one of the teams that beats a Vitality. And not, first of all, not only, like Donna's talking about, not only when they play the big teams did they rarely actually win now. For me, they just sort of gatekeep playoffs. You know what I mean? They're one of those teams that's like a borderline playoff team themselves. But when they get to the playoffs, I'll tie this to past points. I even look at an Aurora and I'm more excited by that. I like, they could win. They could go to a semi or a final. Mm-hmm. I look at Na'Vi and I'm always like, nah, it's not going to happen, is it? They'll probably just lose slightly. And I actually agree. Here's the saddest part is when you actually run through all the players like that, Maui, it's actually a bummer, because I do think that like the Mikaze signing was a good signing. It wasn't amazing, 100%. But it was a good signing. Like, there's been no downside to that for me. Like, I actually do think he has had legit impact. I'm actually surprised at that shit talking. It feels like something personal, mate, because when I watch him play, I think he's sort of like a CIS stare or something. He's just a good player that doesn't have a massive name. He's not going to be the main superstar player. He just seems like a good player. And like you say, if people like Wonderful are going to turn their game around, and if people don't know, Bit's actually good again, this is why people now are focusing on Ima. But here's the thing. I do think Ima is the person who's sort of on the chopping block, as it were, because it was stressed so much the last year and a half or whatever that he's supposed to be like part of the structure and the calling, and he has to have his special roles, etc. So my problem is, if you get all that, you probably should be one of the bigger players in the team, not just a player. But with that said, Na'Vi was never a squad that was just about like, we need just more firepower. They were always like a team, and it was about like, can they execute what Blade and XCB want to do? So my issue is, I also feel like this is another team where, surely you just run this season out and then you just make not one, you make like two changes. You know what I mean? You make like, you decide who's staying, who you like, who you can work with, and then you make some big change. The one downside I have to that is you've actually heard rumours this last year or so that Na'Vi has connected with players. The recent one's Frozen, obviously, people say. Like, I've told people in the past, there was a rumour I heard that Elise asked to join last year and they said no. That's positive in the sense that there's big name players want to join. But unfortunately, the McCarthy signing, I get the feeling people are also out on Na'Vi because they also worry that it's going to be like Mouse and any player has to be like an academy player or a no-namer, you know? I think people don't feel, this is why so much of the drama has been about why they won't sign Simple. It's not that it has to be Simple. People just want to believe that Na'Vi's a team that can get a big name, you know, because the most hype thing whenever you're on a team that's not at the top is to sign a big name player and believe like, oh my God, now everything's possible. Like in this team, again, imagine if Zantara's joined this team. Like you'd be like, holy fuck, right? Maybe we can win the next tournament. So I feel like if you're a Na'Vi fan, it's just a bit of a bummer. It's sad as well, because I actually do, this is a team I do still enjoy watching play. And I do think a lot of things they do on the T side are logical. I actually do like the way some of the players work with each other. I get why people hate on Wonderful, because he's never the guy who's going to put like a million 4Ks up and all no scopes. He's just kind of a more of a boring AWPer. But I actually do think some of the play bit is a fucking awesome. I actually like the Magaza guy. I do enjoy watching him play. It seems like he has good T side impact. So no, I think the best way to summarize it is how I said before this event began, this Star Series that they're playing at. If you look at the field of Star Series, it is worse than the Fisher event, and these are both worse than the Big Lands. If you're Na'Vi and you don't win this Star Series, how can I ever believe you're going to win any tournament this season?
They like, need to win.
Yeah, this is the one where on paper, you're the big dog. You should be the one that wins this one. So look, as we're saying,
it's not too high for this.
At the time of recording, it's not over. Maybe they will win that. But if they don't, I will be a bit blackpilled, I've got to say. I can see why you put it in ugly. I don't think it's all terrible. I agree. It's a good ugly boy, actually. There's still something there, though. I can see what Blade thinks he's working with. Okay, Maui, what is your ugly point?
My ugly point runs counter to my initial point, where I'm excited by all of the TOs that are deciding to run simultaneous tournaments. I'm putting this in ugly specifically because I do want to see where this goes, and I want to see if Kick becomes a better platform overall. And it's something that I actually have a little bit of insight about, because I was invited to the Kick Partner Program myself, and I was just kind of, so now I see what some of their terms are for it. But there are some disadvantages, because what I think is right now the ultimate platform for streaming, and that I personally enjoy watching tournaments on the most, and I'm not saying streamers, because I think watching streamers on Twitch is the best experience because of the chat aspect. The chat aspect is just very fun. It's engaging. It's something that I mean, that's why I like streaming. My chat is fun. I like seeing their messages. Kick has a little bit less. In terms of, I think the auto moderation is bad. I think the auto moderation lets a lot of stuff through very easily. You just see a lot of crazy
messages on there. As in like edgy shit, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's just edgier. It's just a lot edgier, much quicker. And the insight I have about this lately, as I've been given the partner program and I see all the details of it, is that it's just that you won't gain, you can't multi-stream if you're on Kick and get the same revenue share or split.
Oh, it has to be exclusive.
Feeling about Kick. Yeah. Right. Yeah, you're not supposed to. You can technically co-stream, you can technically multi-stream on like kind of like vertical media platforms, like if you're doing Instagram Live or TikTok Live. They don't care about that, but they don't want you to multi-stream to Twitch and to YouTube. So as these new corps begin to stream on Kick, what we can expect from Fisher and from Star Series is that they probably just won't move to YouTube. And I mean, the thing is that ESL, Blast, and PGL all stream on YouTube right now, along with Twitch. And even PGL streams on Kick too. Like, I kind of like that because for whatever reason, one time, like, the broadcast went down on a couple platforms, and I went on the third one. Yeah, the major. So Kick was the only one that held up. So at some times, it's good. It's better to have safeguards. I will say that. But I don't like exclusivity right now with Kick with some of these TOs, just because what you're getting out of it is just a lack of other options. And I think that it to me, I wish that the best platform was decided by the viewer. But the reason this is ugly again is I see the benefits, because the 95-5 split for, and the fact that don't quote me on this because I don't know if this number is true, but this is what I was told by a Kick representative, is that the ad revenue you earn on Kick is roughly equal to 6 times the amount of money you would earn through their own platform as it would be on Twitch. And I, knowing how much I get from ads already, if I just have like 1,000 viewers for a 6-hour stream, it's pretty good. And then if I get six times that, it's very good. It is. It would be.
Oh, so you think more people are going to go over to this in the future?
I would assume so. And so I want to. I would like that. I would enjoy it more. And I get Kick has to do this exclusive thing because they need people to start engaging with their platform a little bit more. But I also think that I think Kick should clean up a couple things about their platform because they're else because Kick through and through is a little bit more of the Wild West of live streaming as opposed to Twitch, which has a bit more moderation. There's more people that are bouncing around the website to ensure that everything here is safe. You know, there's been kind of scary stories about what happens with Kick streamers. I'm not going to get into any of those details, but I don't think that it is as well moderated or puts like Twitch will warn you if you're doing things and they will ban you indefinitely if you're doing things that violate their guidelines pretty quickly. Kick, on the other hand, I haven't seen the same, and I've heard already more negative stories regarding people doing, especially IRL type streams, where bad things.
Oh yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so I wouldn't also want to have to tell Jimmy John, my neighbor, that hey, yeah, I work on Twitch. I work on this website. I could send him to Twitch just fine. I wouldn't feel guilty about that. But if I say, okay, no, the way you're gonna watch me is on Kick.
And then he goes there and sees some massive streamer with like slot machines and weird shit. I know what you mean.
Yep. Yeah. It's just going to be a lot more suggestive. True. So I don't really, it's going to be the rated R live stream experience that he's going to be privy to, as opposed to on Twitch. What's he going to see? Hassan Abi talking about politics.
Oh yeah. True. Whatever. True.
It's fine.
This is what you're into. This is what you do, Maui. Like, no, I just do the games, mate. Honest.
Yeah, yeah, but then when it's Kick, it's like, okay, this guy is like putting himself under duress on purpose. It's like almost becoming Black Mirror-esque over there sometimes, you know. That's all I'm saying. I just think that if we could meet in the middle somewhere. Either they could allow multi-streaming, so just let the viewers decide their platform, or to clean up Kick a little bit, because I don't want to send my relative to a tournament that I'm working on Kick exclusively.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think, Donna?
So I agree on a lot of points with Maui, and I can guarantee you that multi-stream, like multi-platform streaming, will not be possible if it's like a event mainly sponsored by Kick. I've talked to them as well. I also reach out to them because of for this like co-streaming stuff and whatever. So I know exactly what you mean. The offer is not bad. Like you actually get more from the ads compared to Twitch. It is a higher rate. But like, I don't know if you will have the same numbers because you will like not have like all your followers from Twitch seeing that you're live. So it, you know, like you have to make people know that you're streaming, co-streaming now on Twitch, on Kick. And yeah, you maybe have more from ads, but you might also have like half of your viewers only watching. Yeah, it's not allowed to co-stream in English on any other platform except Kick. And I do think that there's going to be no walk around, because if they're going to allow that, then you will have like big streamers like One, for example, or Flom, who are like doing a lot of co-streams in English. If they do that in English, they will probably have, especially One, like more viewers than the main channel on Kick, because a lot of people not go and watch. So I think that's not going to happen at all, that they're going to allow it to do a multi-platform. So I think we just have to hope that they're going to improve Kick. I kind of like made it's actually really good that you had this point as an ugly point, Maui, because I made a tweet a few days ago towards the esports community in CS, and I said like, hey guys, I know like Fisher's going on right now. Can you give me like feedback? How was your like viewing experience? Because I know a lot of people never actually watched anything on Kick.
Sure.
How was your experience like watching CS there? Was it any different from Twitch? And I got like over like, I don't know, 300 replies or something. It's crazy how many opinions there actually were. I didn't think that people cared so much about it, but they actually do. And it was very mixed. So a lot of people said, hey, I actually like Kick, no ads, and you can rewind. And people said, I don't see any difference. And a lot of people said, it doesn't feel the same as Twitch. It's just like not the same feeling. I think people are just like used to watch all these big tournaments on Twitch for so many years and have like their community there. And now it's like, you know, a big part of the community is being sent over to a new platform. Some people said, no, I'm not going to watch at all because it's Kick. And some people, and that was also crazy, said, what, there's a tournament going on right now?
Yeah.
Which I also found crazy because at this point, you already had, like, example, FaZe that played a match, I think, or Falcons. It was Falcons or something. Already, like, big teams playing a match, right. And people didn't even know. And so, yeah, it was, like, very mixed feelings. And I have also a feeling that more TOs are going to go to Kick if they get, like, a good offer from them. And I just know how it's going to change, like, within the community, you know, like, the whole viewing experience and everything. But if that's going to be the future for a lot of TOs, I really hope that they're going to do what Maui said to actually moderate the chats a bit better. And, yeah, there's been some wild things that slipped through on Kick. So I think they need, like, to really, like, hire more people who actually, like, take a look on all this US stuff, you know?
By the way, before I get into the actual specific stuff, I actually want to just say one thing. If you ever watch Donna's stream when she actually plays CS, one of the funniest weird like niches she's built is she, you know, normally it's famous that if a girl ever talks on the mic, all the guys obviously like flaming them or like, oh, shut the fuck up or whatever. She tries to do the opposite, Maui. She actually tries to like riz all the girls that are on her team and hype them up. She does the opposite angle. It's actually like mad entertaining because you can tell they're sort of like, what the fuck's going on here? Because she'll be like, are you a girl? Are you a girl? And they'll be like, yeah. She'll be like, oh, do you want a gun? She'll like pretend like she's the simp giving them the gun. It's actually pretty funny. It's a pretty good angle. It's a good angle.
I glazed them. I actually played with a girl 2 days ago and she had a good clutch and no one said anything. I said, hey, perfect. Played so well and she was so happy about that.
Yeah.
So when I get girls on my team, I'm like extra nice to them because I know that they have different experiences probably. And I can see how it's like lightening up. Like I hear it in their voice, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I know I get like I become giga simp when I have a team, but it's just like, you know, I just want to be nice to them.
Sure. No, like I said, you can see it's the opposite effect. It actually hypes them up. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. On this thing with Kick, the problem is, Maui, this is why it's a good one to put in ugly. The problem is, as Donna alludes to, it's almost certain more to yours will do this because unfortunately, this is actually one of the like planks of the esports revenue that we don't currently have for big CS tournaments, which is Twitch doesn't pay you megabucks anymore to be on their platform. Twitch is just the place everyone needs to be because of the discoverability. And it's where, like you say, a casual fan is essentially what Donna's talking about is the reality of casual fans. We all underestimate this if we're in esports because we're just immersed in the space and we're all like nerds and we know everything and we all follow the websites and see tweets. If you don't do any of that, if you're the guy who just plays CS in the client and then you think, hey, is there any matches on? And you just, what you do is you open twitch.tv and you click CS. And if it isn't one of the top streams, that's it. You think there's no CS, you close it down and you go back and you do something else. You play a different game, you watch a movie. It's real. You can actually not be aware, like you're saying, that like FaZe could be playing Falcons for, you know, and you just won't know that match is happening. So that is unfortunately like a massive factor. That's why, unfortunately, Twitch doesn't have to pay people broadcast rights because the notion is you just will never get the same viewership without Twitch. So the downside of that is, this is why it's ugly. In a way, it's a positive, Maui, that kicks here to say to the tournament, hey, I'll pay you a fee, essentially the broadcast rights, put it on my platform. That, in theory, is actually a positive for esports because what we would like in the future is it to be like football is for television where the money comes from television if people don't know. Like when I'm in the Netherlands, I can't just watch the BBC one. I have to watch like Ziggo or someone who's paid for the Premier League. I have to have that one. That's why they get me to sign up to their cable service. So it is actually in theory like a revenue stream that is needed. It's a massive one in all sports. It's why there's all this drama right now in the NBA about the fact all the games are on all those different platforms because they're trying to make as much money as possible from the people who want to pay to have the game on their platform. So I don't blame them. The downside here though is Kick isn't as big as like YouTube, for example. Because I agree, as well as Twitch, the other one is YouTube. A YouTube algorithm, I think, is the best in the entire world of all platforms. Every time I open the front page of YouTube, if there's a match live in League of Legends or in CS, because I click them all, it'll definitely be on my front page. It'll just be right there the second I open it. So even if I went to YouTube actually to look up, like, you know, a comedy video or something, I'm going to see, like, oh, shit, that game's live. And I might click it. It'll be like live, you know, blast or whatever. Like, that is actually, like, even someone who's a veteran in the scene, that's a way to always remind you the game's going on. If it's on Kick, like you're saying, I don't ever go on that website. So... I would, I, if, if if it wasn't for the fact I'm a nerd and I know all from HLTV and all the tweets, I wouldn't know the game's taking place myself. That's not where I go for discoverability. I think that's kind of a bummer. So yeah, I agree. It's just a tough one. Because I also do think it is rough though, because yes, it means a lot of fans also won't watch the game, even though the tournament is getting money from it. So you're in a really tough spot if you're the TO, because you want to get guaranteed money, but you might have less viewership, like is being said here. And then also the other downside I will say is this. Not every TO is going to be like the ones who do it on Twitch, where in general, as long as they don't have beef for you, they'll nearly all give you co-streaming rights because they just want the total viewership to go up. And in fact, as I've seen with people like Onan, nowadays they'll even invite him to the event and give him his own space and let him like properly like sort of eat at the table, as it were. Like, they, if you consider that a success, some platforms aren't like that. In Kick's case, they want it exclusive. They want to build their viewership. They want to build people going onto the website. So the downside, unfortunately, is they do run things differently. In fact, I even heard, I know Maui heard this as well, I've even heard that there was tournaments where you actually had to pay them to co-stream. It wasn't like they just gave you the rights, you had to pay them. But I swear, we won't say who, but there was someone that we all love who's a really great figure to do streaming. He was streaming this event, and basically, let's just say that the people that tell us these things told us, like, technically he should actually be shut down. He's like illegally restreaming it. He just doesn't know because he thinks this is like Twitch and anyone can just fucking show the game. But like, actually, that's not the case, mate. So I know what you mean. Like, I'm as a viewer used to the idea that like I don't have to watch the main broadcast. I've got like all these different people I can choose from depending on what flavor of CS I want and how I want. But you don't really get that at the moment with the Kick angle. Yeah, it's just them. That's one main stream, and I'm basically just watching the original tournament stream again. So it feels a bit outdated. But I agree. It's a good ugly point. The last point of the show, you teased it, Donna, but I saved it till the end. I've purposely chosen the latest patch and the updates mixed with the response from pros, because the two big name pros that obviously responded, they're not small fucking pros. It's only Nico and Zantara. It's like two of the best aimers in the world. And by the way, they're not happy with the Spray Boys. They're not feeling this update. Like, I mean, technically, no one knows what Nico, as usual, Nico is just some fucking enigmatic figure. I'm like the needy girlfriend pro. Like, what's he thinking? You think about other women, innit? And Nico's just looking off in the distance, probably thinking about fucking Chavapi or something, and not thinking about anything. But I'm just, oh, I saw what, because he never tells you. Like, his tweet was just sort of like, are they all going to be, it's like, can they make the updates any worse? Like, what? Yeah, but tell us what, Nico. What do you like about it, mate? Like, I agree, the updates aren't good, but that's nothing, mate. That doesn't help. That's like walking in a room and going, that smells, and then just leaving without saying what it was or what the smell was. Like, yeah you think you helped, but you didn't. Zantara's at least actually complained. He just basically whined about the thing. I don't hate it, though, because I will say one thing I don't know why Valve is messing with. Valve are just a weird set of cats, bro. Why, of all the things to wake up, oh, I think I might work on CS today. Let's fuck with the spray. What? If there's all the things I wouldn't start touching. No one even complained about the spray in CS2. I think that's one of the only areas everyone was fine with. We're all happy with the AK spray and that pattern. We all like watching Donk. We all know it's hard. Like, I don't know why. It just feels like a classic one where you fucked with someone no one asked to change. So I don't think you could ever make people happy with that one. And as far as I can tell from the top pros, they all think it's just a bad update. It feels like they don't like it. This is a wide open topic. You can take this anywhere you want. What do you think, Donna?
Well, I think that with every update, it feels like even if they fix something, something else will be broken in the game.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of people in the community feel like that. And I think players are complaining much more than you think. Some what I've heard, there's like a lot of like email exchange, players. Just,
oh,
like,
right. Behind the scenes. Right.
Yeah. Players giving feedback like, consistently towards to Valve. And yeah, it's really hard. I just think in general that like CS2 was just not ready. I think if they would have like taken a bit more time for it, they wouldn't be in this situation. And now we get updates and then something else is not coming out. Honestly, I did not really feel a change in spray patterns, but I'm a casual player. If you play like at a top level, like pros, they sense every little detail, right? And,
yes.
and they notice these things, and they notice every little shift in movement or jumping or spray or whatever. It's for like normies like us, probably we don't see such a big difference, right? But for them it matters. And I think that yes, the CS devs, they have to listen to those players, and I do think they're trying to fix it, right? I just like think they don't know how to do that yet, because it's just like they're working in a whole new engine. And I don't know, like I'm not a dev, so it's like really hard to to explain it, but I get the frustration. And it was also like Rob's, by the way, he tweeted also something, and he made a post, like, you know, like this meme where you have like this futuristic city, and then you always write, imagine if this, and then he said, like,
like a space colony.
If we had 128 tick servers, and then this futuristic city. And I mean, he's like, that was like also just like, I think after the Nico tweet or something, it just still doesn't feel the same. Like they're changing a lot of things, but it still doesn't feel like how it was on 128 tick and CO. And like Subtic right now is just not, doesn't feel as good and smooth as before. And it's just like frustrating, but I honestly think we just have to have patience. It's probably going to be better in like 2 years or so. I don't know. I hope so at least. But I don't really feel like there's like really big improvements happening, because if you like look how the players react to it, and they're like really like not hyping up the game a lot, but they're forced to play it. Also something that is quite interesting about the update. So they have like this terminal update now where you can like, you have like a broker who offers you skins. So it's again an update where you purchase things, right? And it just like feels that updates are so focused on like making money.
Right.
And I love CS and I like skins. And I know it's important, but and I used the update like in my last stream. I tried this terminal item and I bought some skin off of it just to see how it is. But still, like as a, I use it for my content, right? But if I stream, I would be like, what the fuck is that? Like, it's again something where you have to spend money. And the last bigger updates were something where you have to spend money, a new case, a new armory, whatever, like no operation, by the way. So it's, I 100% understand the frustration behind it. And it's also quite interesting. So one of my friends, he made a tweet. It was hilarious. Shout outs to Remix Floats. So in their updates, they said customers in Belgium, Netherlands, and so on now unseal the sealed Genesis terminal items. And he noticed the change, because back then they used to say players from can do that.
Right.
Then they changed it to users, and now they change it to customers. So, you know, as a part of the CS community, of course, you ask yourself, okay, so we went from players to users to customers. It is,
sounds a bit cynical.
We came to this point where we are just a bunch of customers for them, I get the anger. I get it.
I'd love to know more about Valve's structure and everything, because it just seems like one of those times when an economist comes in and just says that these things need to change to make money, and like, I don't know. having like lightly looked into becoming a consultant at one point in my life, like that job is just so phony sometimes. It's just like cut 40 jobs to make 30% more as a profit, or like all of these things are just like, duh, you know. Like, so when seeing the update, and I haven't played on it, I play it pretty regularly, but I haven't played in the last 36 hours. I don't know about if you make the mechanics worse, it's just obviously never a good thing. And the lack of, I think it's always just been pervasive in the last 15 years of this game, is just, how is there no significant playtesting by people that actually can feel the game and recognize, yes, this is bad, no, this is good.
By the way, even in League of Legends, 10 minutes. People think Riot are terrible in League of Legends. One of the best things they do is they have that thing that's like the upcoming patch, you can go and test on like a private like environment where you can see what the changes are going to be, and you can give them feedback before they make it live. Like for the actual, like there's like a few weeks gap on that where people know in advance like when things are coming through. So I've always thought the same thing, Maui. Why don't they just get pros and do something like that? Like say we'll have like our own little servers, and you can sort of tell us so that we don't ever push something out that's fucked. You can tell us, like, essentially the greatest example ever obviously would be that R8 pistol all those years ago where they launched it was broke. Like someone would have figured that out in 5 minutes if you'd have given pros that, you know. Like I don't know what the game dev was doing that he ever thought press send on that button. Like it was crazy, wasn't it?
It is. It's absurd, really. I think that the interest I've collected on the take on Hot Take Point made before CS2 came out in the open or the closed beta, that I said Subtick is a mistake and that they should just do 128 tick. That's just, I mean, like, I don't know how much I should be collecting at the end.
Oh, you were loving it when fucking Gooseman himself said it the other day. Like, that's like God himself being like, yes, Maui is right. Like, he actually did criticize Subtic, didn't he, the other day?
Yeah. And the fact that, I mean, the fact that Rops, I mean, take your side. Do you want a developer that used that worked on the original Counter-Strike that said it? Or do you want Rops, who everybody praises is like the most in the Matrix player yes. that you could possibly talk to that, yeah, maybe Subtic's good. Why not give the option to run 128 tick? I still like even early face it CS2 128 yeah. tick had some of the good feelings of CSGO 128 tick, but this hard stance against changing tick rate has really exposed Valve in so many ways. As like, yes, try like how much fucking data do you need? Like that was the one cope that people had early on. Like all of the Valve bootlickers when that shit was happening were all saying the shit that was like they just need more data. They need more data. They'll collect more data. It's been two fucking years of data collecting. How much more data do they need? It's enough data, okay? Yeah. It's fucking worse. It's fucking worse, obviously. Something that you could have figured out day one or day 370.
Yeah. Plus, by the way, as a random update to end the show, as far as I know, aren't you now actually like out of prison? You've had your probation, right, Donna, for the when you were in them streets hustling those stars over. Or whatever the fuck you were doing. Oh, it's still in a month from now, right? Okay. Okay. Yeah, she's been on her best behavior since. She's worked with all the prison programs. She's ready to be released to get into society. It's all good.
You know what's funny? Just for people,
she was farming the stars. If people don't know what they got banned for,
yeah, exactly. So last year, about like 1 year ago, you could farm like the armory.
You could farm
stars faster if you would join like some deathmatch lobbies where you would just like knife each other, and then you would get like I don't know 10 times more stars as like if you would like you know play a match or deathmatch or whatever. And there were some lobbies like this. I have no idea who made them, but we just like people started joining, copying like. Server, I went on one of those servers to farm stars faster, I admit it. And well, a lot of us who farmed a lot of stars got banned for a year, trade banned, which means, but also interesting, only outgoing trades were banned.
Oh, okay.
So, until 1st October, I cannot send out trades and I cannot sell anything, but I can receive trades and I can buy.
Right.
So they did not prevent us from buying, purchasing items on the market. You know, buying cases, opening that. But we could do all of that. We could not sell skins.
Right.
Okay. And the funny thing is, you had like inflation on EG stickers from Stockholm, Stockholm Major. And a lot of people that I know had a bunch of them, and they went like up from like $20 to $400 at some point. And it was like some market money, Chinese market manipulation, I think. And I actually had also, I think, like a few, not so many.
Oh, but you couldn't sell them, right?
No, I couldn't sell. But it's okay. I didn't have as many. Like, right, I have a friend who had like worth 20K of 80 stickers.
And then you just wait for the day you wake up before you're unbanned and they go down again in value and you've lost it all. Yeah,
dude, that was crazy. And now they're back to like $20 or something. So that was tough for people who are banned. That was really tough.
Okay. Well, welcome back to society. You've paid your debt. You know, you're free to now reintegrate and go straight this time. Just go straight.
Yeah, exactly.